The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today. Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening. You're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 20. I'm your host, Otis Gyre. In tonight's episode, I'll be performing four stories for you about nightmarish nature, costly curses, mysterious maulings, and hunters of humans. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first two terrifying tales. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now, it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail, so lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show's about to begin. Our first tale tonight comes to us from author Seth Paul. In it, we'll meet a father whose daughter loves nature, perhaps a bit too much. Without further ado, I present to you He Who Prays. My daughter, Hannah, had always had a fascination with bugs, of all kinds. She collected them and kept them in a terrarium she insisted I buy for her when she was six. It was on a constant rotation as her interest changed. When she was younger, it was ladybugs and caterpillars. Now that she was a teenager, she got into more unusual things like mantises and stick insects. Much of the time I thought she related better to them than she did to me and her friends at school. Not that she had many of them, but she was never bullied, she just kept to herself. That's probably my doing, though. My wife and unborn son were both lost in childbirth, and when I adopted Hannah, I never really tried giving her anything girly to do. So her going out and doing things in the woods and collecting bugs never struck me as odd. What did strike me as odd was her terrarium was currently empty. I found the shoebox and asked her about it, and all she said was that she was working on a project. And as she reminded me, they don't have cocoons. They have a theca. It was something that kind of looked like a cocoon, but sounded more like a Dr. Seuss creation than a real thing. Still, of all the bugs she'd found, mantises were the most interesting to me, the way they stood with those close in the air. Hannah and I watched one on the front porch once, stock still, just waiting for something to walk by. She said they ate other bugs, and sometimes each other. I asked why they ate each other. Without missing a beat, she said that sometimes the larger females would eat the smaller males after mating, or, if unlucky, sometimes before, leaving nothing but wings and a few legs behind. And that was around the time I stopped asking her questions about insects. Despite how odd the shoebox was, I put it out of my mind because what was most important to me was the annual town chili cook-off. To close out the summer, our little town put on a big fall festival, and besides cider, donuts, and local bands that couldn't make it big anywhere else, we had a chili cook-off. I knew this year was my chance to win something. I'd never placed, but this year I had a recipe I was sure was going to make everyone stand up and take notice. I especially wanted to beat out Harris Bowles, if nothing else. Harris usually won first place, but got dethroned last year and spent the better part of the year telling the winner, Ellie Hopkins, that she cheated every chance he got. He tried to pass it off as joking, but everyone knew he was just being bitter and an ass about it. As I worked on my recipe in secret every night, perfecting the recipe whenever I could, life in the house went on as usual, with Hannah taking her little trips out to the woods to collect and catalog all her little specimens. Thing is, she would come in fairly late at night, mostly around dinner time, and except for the shoebox, I didn't see her doing much of anything else. I wasn't completely stupid. I felt like there was more to it than she was letting on. But hey, at least studying bugs was a better hobby than smoking weed and skateboarding around town like most of the teenagers around here did. But I couldn't help the feeling that she had found someone and just didn't want me to know who it was. She probably would think I didn't approve, but hanging out with anyone was a step up in my book. On the day of the festival, I was sure my recipe was going to be a winner. Harris would never even know what hit him. I got up around the crack of dawn, only to find Hannah already up. Now that was certainly strange. She barely woke up at all, unless I went in to get her. Still with that shoebox at her side. "Hey, Dad, I just wanted to tell you, your chili tastes great. You should make sure you have some later." I was flattered that she even cared. But despite her kind words, I'd tried so much of my own chili, trying to get it to be ready, that to be honest, I was kind of sick of eating the stuff. I didn't say that to her, but I did thank her. Amazingly, she wanted me to give her a ride to the festival. Yeah, when I didn't even know she had planned to go. I was so happy that I forgot to buckle my seatbelt on the way there. I was actually one of the earliest, as more and more shuffled into the tent. Harris and Ellie were actually among the last to arrive, and gave each other dirty looks as they set up on opposite sides of the tent. I was just happy to see Hannah come in right when the tent opened. She came by, smiling, and said, "I think the competition's going to be really fun this year. I'm really hoping you'll win." With a shoebox still under her arm, she started going to all the other tables. I hoped she wouldn't ruin her dinner, trying absolutely everybody's, but then again, just the fact that she was here made me feel on top of my game. As the day wore on, I could swear most of the town came through. Most of them complimented my chili, but when the judges came by, they all wore their best stone faces. I couldn't tell where I stood, but I crossed my fingers and hoped for the best. I just hoped that nobody cared that I went and got a couple of hot dogs from one of the food trucks outside for lunch. They were some kind of teriyaki Korean barbecue-style things. Really wish I had thought of those. They're pretty good. Finally, the time came when the judges reached their decision. Near the entrance flap, the judges stood up and announced third place, Ellie Hopkins. There was a nice round of applause, and she took the award with a smile. Then second place, me. More applause, and I raised my arms in triumph. Sadly, though, even as I grinned and accepted my little silver cup, I felt a twinge as I could guess who the first place winner was. I was right. Harris had claimed his crown once again. He acted, as you might have expected, a five-time champion with no sense of class would act, yelling like he was so surprised that it had happened and high-fiving everyone, even if they didn't have their hands up. He took his gold trophy, cleared his throat, and began delivering his victory speech, which sounded like he had been practicing the night before. He got three lines in when he cleared his throat again. He got one more line before he gave a horrendous cough, and then made a sound like his chili was coming up again. It would have been hilarious if everyone in the tent other than me hadn't started doing the same thing. Harris clutched at his throat and retched one last time, and this time I could see his throat had something terribly wrong with it. It was swollen and reddening with each passing second. His whole face was turning bright red, in fact. I looked around for help, but the MTs on hand in the tent were also grabbing at their throats and falling to the ground. I ran to Harris and, assuming he was choking, got in place to give him the Heimlich. I gave one quick thrust. It was the worst thing I could have done. In that moment, I felt something underneath Harris's skin, at his stomach, squirming and wriggling, and when I applied that pressure, I made it all press up and out. Something greenish fell from his mouth in a wave, then his nose, then his throat. It split open like a sausage that had been squeezed. The greenish wave I saw started writhing on the ground in a thick mass. I stepped away from Harris as his body fell to the ground, as more and more of those green things emerged from his throat and his mouth, and then, to my growing horror, his eyes. I looked around the tent and saw that the same thing was happening to everyone else there. Green insects forcing their way out of every hole imaginable, and when they couldn't do that, they made their own way out. Soon, everything in the tent was covered in them, covered in small, praying mantises. And then they started to feed on everyone they landed on. If they hadn't pushed their way out of the eyes already, that was what they went for first. They even started coming for me. Some landed on my bare arms and started biting. I brushed them off and heard crunching underfoot as I ran over and stomped as many as I could, escaping the den of horrors. I ran from the tent and out into the open festival, gagging and wishing I'd eaten something so I could throw up. But instead I saw people screaming, as several people out in the festival were covered in mantises as well. I looked for Hannah, remembering how she had been in the tent so early. I wanted to make sure she was okay, but I couldn't find her. even as more and more people started coughing up the little mantises. She wasn't anywhere to be found. I tried calling her on her phone. No answer. I then heard a strange far-off noise. It was a high-pitched whistling, like an emergency broadcast made with a defective dog whistle. A loud hum came from all around me, and I had to duck as every mantis in the place swarmed out of the tent and away from the fallen bodies. They scratched me as they passed, and then suddenly they were gone. I got up and saw the insect cloud flying off to the west. I didn't wait around. I ran as fast as I could to my car to chase the cloud. I didn't know what I thought I would do, having gotten such a late start trying to catch it, but I finally saw where it started to dissipate. I pulled my car up in my driveway as I saw the last hints of the cloud vanishing into the woods behind my house. Weeks later, when the police sent me video someone had on their phone, catching Hannah pulling something from her shoebox and dropping it into a pot of chili in the cook-off, I can now say I was not surprised. I also wasn't surprised when a noted entomologist stated that these things weren't pure mantises, because mantis nymphs can't fly. I can also say they'll never catch Hannah, because what I found in those woods, I haven't revealed to anyone until now. In the woods, I came to a clearing. A few mantises were still fluttering around there, but thankfully they ignored me. I saw things carved into the trees. Some of them looked years old. There were weird shapes, like a hieroglyphic language, as well as images of an insect. It vaguely resembled a mantis, but I could see digits like fingers. When I could see words I could read, I kept seeing the phrase, "He who prays," written all over. It looked like this thing was worshipped like a god or a leader. All of it was in Hannah's handwriting. There were other phrases, too. "Coming of age" came up a lot, as was "the return." And then I saw a trail leading into the woods. I followed discarded clothing. I picked them up. It was the clothes Hannah had been wearing that day. They led to a large brown shape attached to a tree. It looked like a sleeping bag, but larger, with a large hole in the middle, like it had split on the inside. Something Icarus dripped from it. But there was something else inside, something brittle. I pulled it out. A skin. A shed skin, like a snake. But not a snake. A human skin. Hannah. But there was more. I followed a trail of strange footprints to another small clearing, and that was when I went to go get a lighter and some gasoline to destroy everything in those unholy abominations in those clearings. In that clearing was the largest set of wings I had ever seen, along with several pairs of unnaturally large insect legs. They all looked like they had been chewed.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
I hope you enjoyed He Who Prays, by author Seth Paul, as performed by yours truly. Up next, we've got a second terrifying tale for you, this one from author N.M. Brown. In it, a man sets out to prove he's got what it takes to protect his family after they fall prey to an age-old curse. Without further ado, I present to you The Misfortune of an Unwanted Visitor. Carpet smells of decay and mud as I flatten my face against the floor in an attempt to hide under our queen-size bed. An incessant banging at the door resonates through my brain, feeling like I'm being impaled with an iron spike. Each knock slams it deeper into my throbbing temples. "Mr. Hutchinson, are you home?" A voice inquires, yelling through the mail slot. I recognize it as my son's second-grade teacher, Mrs. Mason. Dread grips my heart in cold gray hands as I remember not closing the shade to the kid's bedroom window. I wonder if she can see the red painting the walls, turning brown over time with oxygenation. Undoubtedly, I decide. "Joseph hasn't been to school for 3 days now," Mrs. Mason continues. "We've been trying to call you. Is everything all right?" Mrs. Howell says, "Courtney hasn't been in either. Truancy is a very serious issue in our district. I know I don't have to tell you that, Mr. Hutchinson. Please contact us immediately." Although irritating, the tone of her voice makes me thankful that she was Joseph's teacher. She spoke with the perfect combination of care and assertiveness, a difficult thing to do. I wonder if she spoke to her husband and colleagues the way she spoke to me just now, like a child reminded to put their shoes away after coming in from play. Mrs. Howell was our daughter's fourth-grade teacher. A memory flashes through my mind's eye of my wife, Michelle, grabbing my hand as we were leaving the kids' school. We had just walked out of the double doors, tunneling through swarms of parents as everyone tried to get to the parking lot. It was Meet the Teachers Day. Michelle grabbed me, eyes alight with the prospect of a happy future for our kids. "Oh my God, Jake, I love her," she beamed, relaxing her head against my chest. "I hope Joseph has her for fourth grade." My wife brought a hand up lovingly to my face as we watched our kids. Courtney was giggling with her friends as Joseph searched the flower beds for grasshoppers. Not that any of it matters now. Before I get too far ahead of myself, I want to explain. My family means more to me than anything else in life. That's exactly why I had to do what I did, to protect them. It started when something crunched under my foot, leaving a smattering of legs, antenna, and white goo left behind in its wake. Cockroaches, spiders, and all sorts of other bugs, save for ticks and female mosquitoes, left behind black or white sludge. I questioned whether or not their bodies contained red blood like ours did. Maybe there was just too little of it to see with the plain human eye. Our son, Joseph, loved insects, grasshoppers especially. He must have brought one inside, despite Michelle and I's many lectures about not bringing any bugs home. He could touch them if they were safe, but he must always put them back where he found them. It disgusted my wife terribly. But kids will be kids. As long as he wasn't hurting anything, I figured what was the harm. Horror takes hold of my senses as I realize what type of insect it is that I've just killed. Not a grasshopper, but a cricket. My grandfather's words rang through my ears at a deafening volume. "Never kill a cricket in your house, lest your family member meet the same fate." My breath hitched as I wrapped a wrinkled tissue around what was left of the creature to clean it off the floor. I remember feeling stupid for being frightened. I mean, it's not like I did it on purpose. Michelle and the kids were visiting her parents, who lived about 3 hours away. They left earlier that morning and planned to be back by the end of the day. I took the opportunity to stay behind and make some repairs around the house. It was a lot easier and faster to get things done without little ones underfoot, and Michelle asking how much longer I was going to be every 10 minutes. My hammer wasn't in its usual spot in the hall closet, causing me to have to drop what I was doing and travel out to my shed. It was a broken-down old thing. Years of laziness and neglect led it to the dilapidated state it was in now. Michelle called it a forgotten wasteland, filled corner to corner with a menagerie of cast-aside items. The latest symptom of its failing form was a nickel-sized hole in the rear, left corner of the roof. That, as luck would have it, just so happened to be directly above where I'd last placed my old toolbox. Rusted metal hinges creaked under the weight of the contents of the plastic box. I groaned as traces of water began to slosh out the sides with each footstep toward the porch. Great. I'd be lucky if anything in there was salvageable. There had to be at least $200 worth of tools, if not more. A sea of black greeted me as I bent down and opened up the lid. It was a chirping, skittering swarm of crickets. Millions of hairs on hundreds of sets of legs rubbed in unison as their antenna twitched with feverish anticipation. Cacophonies of chirps echoed through the late afternoon air as they exploded out of the box. My arms swung frantically as they tried to invade my eyes, nostrils, and ears. I would have screamed if I hadn't been so afraid to expose my open mouth. Tiny drops of rain had started to fall. I dashed in the house, leaving the rusted tools to be discarded once more for life's unexpected plans. Pieces of clothing were torn off one by one on my way to the bathroom, my arm still swatting at imaginary prickles on my twitching skin. Freshly showered and cricket-free, I poured myself the largest tumbler of whiskey that I could find. I'd done enough for one day. The shelving in the kitchen had needed to be fixed for over 10 months now. What's one or two more days in the grand scheme of things? Television had always been an ultimate source of comfort to me. I turned it on and flipped through the channels, sipping my drink with annoyance at how late it was getting. It didn't do any good to get dinner started until I knew my wife and children were on their way. Michelle hadn't called, so I assumed she hadn't left her parents yet, and it was doubtful she would pick up something to eat on the way. Takeout was a luxury we could barely afford. My impatience quickly morphed into alarming concern as my eyes snapped open. The sky was pitch dark outside of our living room window. I nodded off in my chair, slightly drowsy from the day's mental efforts, and lulled to sleep by the rain. According to my phone, it was almost midnight. My family was supposed to be home hours ago. Calling my wife's phone was no use. I was instantly greeted with a full voicemail message each time that I tried. When I called Michelle's parents, they awakened from a startled sleep and told me she'd left hours ago, but not to worry. She likely pulled over due to the storm. I looked outside, noting it was barely even raining anymore. Again, my late grandmother's voice bellowed through my subconscious. Never kill a cricket in your house, lest your family member meet the same fate. It couldn't be. It's just an old schoolyard rhyme. The step on a crack, break your mother's back of my grandmother's generation. I thought back to other superstitions I'd encountered over the years and shuddered at their accuracy. I walked under a ladder the day my dog, Rocco, was killed in the road. One time I was playing baseball outside and threw the ball through the living room window. It shattered my mother's front mirror. Later that evening, my father was involved in a head-on collision on his way home from work. He survived, but devastating medical bills haunted our family that took 7 years to pay off. The mental dam of my rationale began to crumble, letting streams of doubt and intrusive thoughts trickle in one by one. Just as the bands of hope holding me together were about to snap, the glow of headlights illuminated my living room from the front drive. Courtney burst through the front door in a distracted rush. "Gotta pee," she announced as she zipped past me into the dark house. Michelle trailed slowly behind her, holding a sleeping Joseph in her arms. Aggressive whispers left her lips, ordering Courtney to be quiet so she wouldn't wake her brother up. She looked weary, stressed even. "Hey, babe, love you. Get a juice cup ready in case he wakes up, okay?" she asked, briefly planting an exhausted kiss on my cheek, on the way to our son's room. The moment he was settled, she leapt into my arms. "I'm so sorry we were late. My phone died and the charger cord I brought wasn't working. There was a terrible accident in front of us on the way home. The other vehicle missed us by inches. It was a miracle we managed to avoid getting hit." I hugged her back tightly, thankful to have my wife and children home safe. "That's why we were so late," she continued, her voice growing thick with emotion. "We stopped to give statements to the police. The driver of the car ahead of us didn't make it. Jake, we could have been..." She didn't finish her sentence, just collapsed into my arms in a heap of tears, overwhelmed with exhaustion from the day's events. I offered her the rest of my whiskey and rubbed her back as she gulped it down. A debilitating nightmare tortured me in my sleep. The kind that stays with your soul long after you've awakened. I remember entering the house alone in the middle of the night. Our living room was a sensory deprivation chamber of foreboding, black and soundless. I stumbled blindly through my home, hands outstretched, desperately searching for something familiar. A single beam of light appeared under our children's bedroom door. I used that light as a beacon and made my way forward, towards light, towards hope, towards my family. A siren of chirps consumed the silent atmosphere the moment I opened their door. My wife and two children lay on the floor before me, slaughtered. Their lifeless bodies were bent at unnatural angles, eyes wide in shocked thousand-yard stares. Each mouth hung gaped open as crickets entered and exited them. All three sets of eyes rolled towards me as I started to scream. Their jaws began to open and close, with each resounding chirp still teeming with crickets. I awoke with a start, sitting straight up in bed as I gasped for air. Michelle lay beside me, sleeping peacefully, blissfully unaware of the horrors my mind had just witnessed. The hem of her nightgown jittered and danced in the still, breezeless room. It wasn't until she absent-mindedly slapped her leg that I saw a tiny black head appear from underneath. The cricket skittered over her skin, making its way over to me as I jumped out of our bed. "Jake, what's wrong?" she mumbled groggily, rubbing the sleep from her golden eyes. "There's a damn cricket in the bed. I was trying to get fresh with you under your nightgown," I feebly joked through terrified teeth. To my utter revulsion, she simply plucked it off the bed, smashed it between her fingers, and threw it across the room, wiping her hand clean on the side of the bed sheet. I didn't need to hear my grandmother's voice haunting me this time. I automatically said the words to myself internally. "That's too dead now." Sure, I may have killed some from the toolbox earlier, but that was outside the home. A morbid thought flew in through the windows of my temporal lobe, clinging to the walls and spreading throughout my senses. Which one of my family members was I going to lose? Who would get to live and who would die? Seeing as I was already awake, I decided to get up and check on Joseph and Courtney in their rooms. Their faces looked so angelic, so peaceful, as I watched them sleep. I couldn't imagine one of them growing up without the other, Couldn't imagine my life without either of them. Favoritism doesn't exist when it comes to losing a family member. I'd gladly sacrifice myself if I thought it would save them. As I began to close the door, the sharp staccato of a cricket's chirp pricked the periphery of my hearing. When I swung the door open again, there was nothing but an eerie silence. I shook the rotted roots of death from my mind in an attempt to snap out of my macabre mental state. The rest of my sleep was restless, but uneventful. When I went to wake up the kids the next morning, I hesitated before opening their door, my ear pressed firmly against it as I listened for a cricket's call. After a few moments of silence, I entered their room. Courtney woke right up, but Joseph didn't respond as I called his name. He laid with his back to me, his little face pressed deeply into the upper corner of the mattress. "Yo, Joe," I said to him, shaking his shoulders gently. "You gotta get up, bud. It's time to get ready for school." His skin was overwhelmingly warm, a human space heater, just like his mother. It was hard to cuddle her at night in the summer months because her body radiated heat when she slept. I smiled thinking about that. Everyone says both of our kids look like me, but their personality and habits are all Michelle's. I rolled him over to wake him, falling to my knees in terror at what I saw, my mouth filled with saliva as it readied to empty the contents of my stomach. The skin in my arms was riddled with goosebumps, making me painfully aware of every hair. Joseph's mouth hung open in a silent scream as insects scurried in and out of his mouth. A baby cricket left his upper lip, making a pathway for his left nostril, and that's when I lost it. Michelle found me crouched on the floor screaming. The sheets of Joseph's mattress had been shredded by my own two hands. The kids were huddled together on Courtney's bed, crying in terror. Their screams pulled me from my waking dream, and I flew to my feet, instantly running to my son. I checked his eyes, ears, nose, and mouth for any sign of foreign object or parasite. Thankfully, there were none. "Oh, I'm so sorry, buddy," I said quietly, trying to ease his fear. "Daddy fell asleep on your floor and had a bad dream. I'm okay. Come here, Courtney." My little girl ran into my arms, drying her tears on my shirt sleeve. "Now my eyeshadow's going to be ruined," she whined. "Eyeshadow?" I looked at my wife incredulously. The wry smile on her face let me know that this was something that had been going on for a while now. When did my little girl get so big? "Go eat breakfast, kids. Then brush your teeth and get dressed," she instructed. They both ran to the kitchen to follow her request. "What the hell was that about, Jake? Are you all right?" Her golden eyes were wide with concern as she grabbed my face. "Yeah, I'm sorry. I must have been sleepwalking and dreamt I saw a bug in Joe's bed." I ran a hand through my hair and tried to muster the most sheepish expression that I could manage. I didn't want her to think I was batshit crazy, though I certainly felt that way. I drove to work in a haze, only subconsciously aware of what I was doing with my mind a million miles away. It seemed to take a third of the usual time to get to work. The air outside was thick and hot. I cringed as a grasshopper hopped across the pathway ahead. "For Christ's sakes, Jake, it's just a bug," I chastised myself. My supervisor grabbed me toward the end of my shift, telling me that I had an important phone call. "Hello," I answered. "Jake," my wife sobbed. "There was a school bus accident. No one will tell us anything officially, but I heard someone say the number 163. Some of the kids got really hurt." "All right, honey, calm down and pray. Even if it's not our kid's bus, you need to pray. Call the school again. Keep calling until you get through. The number for the bus depot is in my black address book. in my nightstand. I'm leaving work now, okay? I'll be right there. I assured her before hanging up the phone. When I turned down our street, I saw two vans in front of my house. The top of Michelle's head was visible above the second vehicle, and it was obvious that she was crying. Horror gripped my heart and slowed to an almost lethal level by the thought of losing our children. Relieved tears filled my eyes unexpectedly as she came into my unobstructed view. Courtney and Joseph stood, their faces pinned to her chest, as she held them close. Each wore a confused and annoyed expression on their face. "It wasn't their bus," she called out to me as soon as she saw my truck. That night we ordered pizza, ate ice cream, and watched a family movie. We all lavished the time we spent together, healthy and alive. More nightmares plagued me throughout the next week, all scenes of the death of one of my family members. Sometimes it was Joseph, sometimes Courtney. Michelle was always the constant victim. I saw her death in many scenarios, each more horrifying than the last. My family was cast in their own roles in the Final Destination movie inside my head, and they had no idea. My family was dying every single second of every single day, and I felt powerless to stop it. After 3 weeks of torture, medications, meditation, and alcohol, I was blessed with an epiphany. I did have the power to stop it. In fact, I was the only one with the power to save my family from the threat they couldn't seem to hear or see. I would destroy the bastards, one furry leg at a time. Always chirping, taunting, they lured me from a sound sleep. One night I just couldn't take it anymore. The whiskey was warm as it trickled down my welcoming throat, turning into a steel resolve once it hit my empty stomach. Tonight was the night I would put an end to this once and for all. I kept a fly swatter by the bedside table in case any more of the fuckers decided to molest my wife. My hand closed around it, knuckles white with resolve, as the chirp of a cricket reverberated through the dead of night. I charged through my kid's bedroom door in a drunken stupor. A spatter of goo flew across the wall, signaled by the first cricket's call as I decimated it with my fly swatter. Another echoed through my brain as one fell to the floor in eternal slumber, never to be harmed by bad luck or superstitions again. The third brought a barrage of blows as my grandmother's voice echoed through my eardrums, "Never kill a cricket in your house, lest your family member meet the same fate." By the fourth cricket, it was all over. I was the only one left. Blood was everywhere. As I looked at the fly swatter in my hand, I realized it wasn't a swatter at all, but a bloodied hammer. There were no crickets, only bodies. I was alone to face the reality of what I had done, what I thought I had to do. And that brings us to the present. There has been complete silence since they've all been gone. The void, the sheer emptiness of silence, taunts me. I supposed eventually there will be the buzzing of flies, though I won't be around to hear it. The addition of my body to the massacre may very well be the one that attracts them, like buzzards to roadkill. My ultimate plan is to join them. Guilt gnaws at my insides as my bloodied hands gather every prescription bottle that I can find. It doesn't seem fair that I get to peacefully fade into death when my family met such a gratuitously violent end. Metallic bitter taste coats my tongue as I fill my mouth with pills, making sure to thank God for all the good I've done and the devil for all the fun I've had. I know the weight of my actions will weigh against my damn soul when the time comes, and that's okay. Wherever I end up, I can rest easy knowing I did everything in my power to protect my family. Nothing bad can ever befall any of them again.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
I hope you enjoyed The Misfortune of an Unwanted Visitor by author N.M. Brown, as performed by yours truly. I'd like to personally thank you for joining me for this episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard on today's program, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference and would mean a lot to us. If you'd like to hear a premium extended edition of tonight's and all of our other podcast episodes featuring Twice the Terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the Patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can purchase season's passes for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs, or become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get your access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Gyre channel, where you'll find releases of my series, Horror Storytime, dating back to 2014. Find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, too. Just search for Otis Gyre. Until next week, stay spooky and get some sleep, if you can. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyre. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyre channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at chillingtalesfordarknights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.